365 days a year.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel and Diane Duvernay, your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11 and on Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people in Santa Barbara at Figueroa and Anacapa Streets, and in Montecito's Upper Village. At Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm, coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
So how are you doing, Neil?
Well, my wife said to me today, do you know what today is? And I said, February 1st. And she said, yes. And do you know what that means? I said, no. She said, that was our first date.
Oh, how many years ago?
54 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, and we survived without killing each other.
Yeah. No, we've had 35 wonderful years of marriage. That joke is so old. I don't even think it's funny. So do we have a guest today?
We do. We are thrilled to welcome to the show Catherine Canty from South Carolina, who is a business coach and a leadership coach. Catherine, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Diane and Neil. I appreciate your time.
So a little bit different than usual, I was able to come up with seven articles about the game store shorting situation. And I thought what we could do today, because it's such an interesting story, and it actually has implications even beyond what has taken place over the last 2 days, I thought I would take these seven articles and lay them out and take quotes from each one and try to string together a story so we can understand actually what happened and what the implications are. So the first article, and they're not, interestingly, these articles are not in chronological order. So it's as if the reporters were able to sort of put together the story, but it didn't come out perfectly clear in the first day or the second day. So this story, this article from the New York Times says that problem was that when you sell short a stock, what that means in English is that when you borrow stock that you don't own and you sell it with the hope that the stock will go down to a price lower than you sold it, you can buy it back and then return it to the people, which is usually a financial institution, almost always a financial institution, and buy it back at a lower price. And this stock and a couple of other stocks were GameStop and several other stocks were doing so poorly that it became a favorite of hedge funds to short because most sophisticated investors thought these companies were really in bad shape. And what happened was a group, and this is the interesting part, which some of the other articles will go into, is when the power of the internet showed its face when a bunch of Robinhood investors, and I use the word Robinhood, which is an app for people who typically are younger and are less interested in fundamentals and more interested in trading, began to communicate with each other on Reddit that said, hey, if we all buy the stock or buy options on the stock, it will drive the price up. And if the price goes up, the hedge funds will have to buy the stock back in order to avoid catastrophic losses. So the combination of their buying plus the hedge funds being forced to buy their stock back caused the stocks to go up 1,000 times. And there's been a whole bunch of controversy over what implications this has for the stock market and we're going to go now to the next article to take a look at some of these issues. And in the Wall Street Journal Saturday, one reporter said that moving in sync and en masse, such traders can drive a stock way up or down, even if each trader commits only a few dollars. Professionals, on the other hand, are legally restricted from colluding. So this is the interesting thing. You and I, as individuals, can go on a website and start touting a stock, whereas an institution can't. That, you know, that is against the rules. So the individual has an advantage in that they're not subject to the regulations that hedge funds and all other professional investors are subject to. And the next article found that, or talked about the fact that there is a sort of a collective sense of beliefs that are, whether it's QAnon or whether it's about the election, there's this group of people, which is a large group, that when they are subject to and what this particular reporter called epistemic systems, that is information that only goes to them if it is consistent with their worldview. So the internet providers have these algorithms that direct the information flows based upon what you looked at before. So you've got this situation in where you get more and more information that verifies and solidifies your position, even if your position isn't particularly well-founded in fact. The next article talks about it used to be that the barriers to stock trading were pretty high. Before 1974, 1976, where you began to get negotiated rates, it was almost impossible to make money trading because the commissions were so high. And over the years, not only have commissions come down dramatically, but they've gone down in many cases to zero. And index funds provide the opportunity to trade with almost no cost, if not no cost. And so with the combination of almost no friction or commissions and the Robinhood simplicity of buying and selling, they sort of made it possible for people to, again, what institutions can't do, start talking about ideas and end up essentially buying something that isn't anywhere near any worth what it is now selling for, simply by the power of convincing everyone that they should be doing the same thing. And the last point that is sort of interesting is about how politicians don't really understand Wall Street. People started, and it was on the left and on the right, AOC on the left and Cruz on the right, saying this is horrible, this is terrible what Robinhood is doing. They stopped trading in these stocks, and they're protecting the hedge funds. And that was not the case. They were protecting their own companies, because when you have volatility in the stock market, the clearinghouses where Robinhood or Merrill Lynch clears their transactions through have to put up more collateral. And it was such a hectic and so much volume and so much volatility that the amount of money that was required by the clearinghouses was so great that the Robinhoods had to really basically stop permitting their clients to buy the share. So it wasn't a nefarious protection of hedge funds. It was simply a necessity. And the final point, which I think we've used this quote before, came in one of the articles, and it said Benjamin Graham's one of his, you know, Benjamin Graham from Graham and Dodd, the father of, you know, fundamental investing, said, in the short run, the market is a voting machine reflecting voter opinion, but in the long term, it's a weighing machine affecting reality. So the bottom line is that we have a situation here that's sort of testing the ability of the market to maintain its integrity because of a circumstance that is a combination of the democratization of stock trading and, in my opinion, really stupid, immature young people who are going to be the victims of the fact that these stocks are going to plunge. In fact, GameStop is down 100 points today. And the average investor, they said, even before that happened, in GameStop actually had a price a price higher than the price it closed at on Friday. So that's the situation. And I think I can go home now.
Well, that was some conversation, Neil. I'm feeling bored.
Well, thank you for being bored. Yes, we usually have a conversation, but
I got nothing today.
Well, you know, I think it's really important because this is something that is a long time in coming and it's going to happen again. And I think people shouldn't lose sight of the fact that with all of the hullabaloo that took place this last week, it only affected less than 1% of the value of the stock market. So the market itself is fine. It's just that when you have people playing with instruments that they really don't understand, particularly options, and they have the ability to talk to each other and get themselves all riled up, you know, you can get anything from a riot in the Capitol to a riot in the stock market.
Well, and I think it's important that these people that are not as familiar with the stock market realize that they do need to sell, because otherwise they're going to ride it all the way back down, as you know, GameStop's earnings don't equal the stock price that it was earlier today.
And the problem that most of these kids don't realize is taxes. When you trade a stock and it's not long term, you owe taxes that could be as high as 37% on short-term gains. So somebody could be trading stocks for the fun of it and, you know, trade 3 or 4 times in 2-3 days, end up not with much of a profit, but could end up with a very large ordinary income gain. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending since 1988. A mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner.
And if anyone's out there listening that hasn't refinanced in the last year, it really would behoove you to take a look at your interest rate and see if refinancing will work for you. They are so low right now, and Kelly Marsh and her team at Cornerstone have do a great job and provide great service. So it's definitely worth giving Kelly a call. If you're just joining us, we have the pleasure of having Catherine Cantley, who is a business coach and recovering banker, I guess, with us on the show today. Hi, Catherine. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you, Diane, for having me.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got into banking originally, and you know, why did you get involved in banking, and how, why did you get out?
Okay. Just kind of a quick overview. I started out as a teller in banking 20 plus years ago. So everybody remembers when you get out of high school and you need some summer jobs. And I would come home during the summer and work as a floating teller. And those tended to be the positions that no one wanted to fill. So I went into all the rural communities where we ran out of cash at times and had to go meet somebody in the grocery store parking lot to get envelopes of cash to go back and cash Social Security checks on Friday afternoons. And if the third fell on a Friday, it was like a double whammy. So we were learning a lot in a short period of time, just being a float teller going around to all these Old Nation Bank branches. And so I did that for a number of years and spent basically the past 18 years in corporate banking. And I traveled around the country and helped other people grow their business. The beautiful thing about being in banking is everybody needs money, and you get to open up a lot of doors for people and collaborate with people who have different backgrounds and different experiences. And I was very fortunate to spend the bulk of my time working for a commercial bank that was regionally located in the Southeast. I created products for customers that was a win-win for them, and it allowed us to solve their problem. The last 7 years, I actually spent time going into agriculture and rural communities, helping provide large lines of credit into there and technology for them. And so in a nutshell, if I had to summarize it, I spent 20 years helping other people grow their business in the banking industry. So it was a great experience.
And what big takeaways do you think you had after you got out of banking that you could translate into your current business?
I think even right now, collaboration is key. And I think collaboration is key no matter what industry we're going to be in. I just wrote and prepped a newsletter for tomorrow, and it's all about collaboration. And what I started out doing just 2 years ago is trying to pay it forward and help my community, created a 12.1 public and private partnership that helps close the broadband gap. That couldn't have taken place without the collaboration of diverse sets of minds and diverse sets of people sitting around the table and agreeing on one thing. And the one thing we could agree on was our community needed reliable internet for us to continue to succeed. And the meeting that I'm going to be having tomorrow with community leaders, business owners, CPAs, and attorneys is going to be around the topic of opportunity zones. And there is opportunity zones across the country to be able to bring businesses and to bring benefit to people who own business buildings in these rural communities. And so we're going to educate our community on what this means for the owners of the property and for the owners of the businesses. And again, this all streams back into collaboration. When you're in a corporate environment, when you're in corporate banking, you have to collaborate. And for me to be able to create change and to be able to create efforts and results in corporate America, we're collaborating not just with the customer, the client, the prospect, but I have to collaborate internally with operations, with the CFO, with procurement, with legal, with everybody that's in the back of the room having to pull this stuff together. And the only way we're fully going to succeed is to be able to bring everybody around the table and collaborate. So whether we're in corporate or whether we're out on our own, collaboration is a huge takeaway for me.
So let me ask you about collaboration. You know, today the country is split. You know, there's the reds and there's the blue, and no one talks to each other without having their backup. Are you able to create an environment and have conversations that bring in people with all different points of view and have them have a civil conversation?
I can't guarantee that I can promise a civil conversation that's going to happen overnight. Everything that we do, even this $12.1 million investment, it it took 2 years, Neil. Like, it took 2 years of very small conversations and just, A, can you show up to the table? And I know that you don't like Joe. And I know, Mary, you don't like Joe. And but Joe doesn't like any of you either. It's like, we've got to get these people, you know, just come to the meeting. And I just want to share one idea. And the one idea is, we're suffering as a community in these areas. Can we agree on one thing? And that one thing was, can we agree that we need reliable internet? And when you have that conversation and you begin to hear other people talk, that's where the gold is you listen to what they have to say, you reiterate what you're hearing, and you do very small follow-ups of what can we do next? What can I hold you accountable for? But it doesn't happen overnight.
But it seems like you've reached success as you've gotten to this point.
Yeah, no, it's success. And I think part of it, you know, you collaborate, but you got to celebrate the small wins along the way. And that's another big takeaway for me, is to celebrate these wins along the way.
Absolutely. So your approach really has applicability, not just to what you're doing, but for a whole host of societal conflicts. You know, the whole tribalism of this country, there needs to be a solution to it. So maybe what you're doing could be used for reconciliation with, you know, everyone, for just not this internet issue, but for a whole bunch of other issues.
Yeah, we have a local United Way that keeps everything local here with our efforts. And we have different people who can give different sizes of money, but some people can't give money. And so I approach them with, can you provide your services? And it kind of opens up doors. People, we come in, we know what we can do, but we don't always think outside the box and know that we can donate services that could help a different portion of the local community charities that we've got going on. So thinking a little bit outside the box also helps.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
When a bank is owned by the community and invests in the community, it answers to a different call. It's personal. It's driven by your needs, not ours. Welcome to American Riviera Bank, based right here in Santa Barbara with branches in Montecito and Goleta. Our customers know us for personal service, every day, every way.
You can bank on us.
Bank on us.
Bank on us!
American Riviera Bank. Bank on better.
Since 1994, Opera Santa Barbara has celebrated and championed the breadth and beauty of opera throughout California's Central Coast. Here's Artistic Director Costas Protopapas.
I have been the Artistic Director of Opera Santa Barbara since July of 2015. In the regular season, we did three main stage productions. In addition, we had a long series of noontime concerts that take place at libraries that are part of the Santa Barbara library system. So we try to bring music, awareness of the arts, and the rich historical literary background that the art form of opera brings with it to as many parts of the community as possible. Our website is operasb.org. There's updates there. Of course, our social media are very active, Facebook and Instagram.
To learn more about Opera Santa Barbara, go to operasb.org or call 805-898-3890.
This is the place that talks about Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara's astronomical unit.
Community Matters.
Radio, real estate.
Money Talk.
The Andy Caldwell Show.
Santa Barbara T-Sports Radio Show.
Golf Radio Show.
Community Alert.
Mortgage Matters.
Welcome to the Voices.
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 Voices of Santa Barbara.
The CEO Report.
And CSUCI presents About Education.
Farm to Table Hour.
Around the World.
The Jeremiah Show. The
History Friday.
The Art and Antiques Radio Show. Garden
Gossip. Cork and Fork Radio Show.
Solutions News. Conversations that count.
Tell me your story.
KZSB. AM 1290.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And you can reach us at 805-564-1290 if you have any questions, or you could email us at moneytalk1290@gmail.com. So Catherine, on the break, we were talking about, you know, the real issue that you have in with broadband and in our current situation of the pandemic, how is that working for educating the children of South Carolina?
So in the county that I live in, we're one of the first of five counties in South Carolina to have one tablet per one student. So it's a one-to-one ratio, which I didn't understand how any of this worked. But now that I have a second grader, this rings home very close to me. So we have a one-to-one ratio. And the trouble is we have students that don't have reliable broadband at home. So even if they want to have access to internet, they cannot get it because we don't have internet near them. We can't get internet anywhere near the house. So for them to be able to study back when everything was still on lockdown, they had tablets at home. And if we had Zoom calls or if we had, you know, classroom phone calls back before we got back to normal, they would have to go find a hotspot. And the hotspots would be on school buses. And we would try to locate these school buses in a central location. We would ask for them to take their kids to a Starbucks, to a McDonald's. But as you know, if you can't be in a neighborhood that has reliable broadband, you may or may not be able to have the transportation, because that's also an issue in rural communities, is transportation to jobs, transportation to get your kids to school. And so it begins to get very trying. We have lost some students that we haven't been able to find to get back into the school system. So I just admire everything that our school district has done. My husband and I went to the meeting when they discussed what the options were going to be when we came back, and the school district has given us options, and I think that's what's most important to us right now. We have options to send our kids back face-to-face. We have an option to send our kids back virtually, and we have an option to send our kids back. If they can't be done virtually, there'll be recorded classes, and then the parents can take the kids to a hotspot to be able to learn. So we can also change our decision as a parent every 4.5 weeks to be able to get them back in face to face or to take them back out if we choose to do that. The precautions that the school district have put in place for COVID and the just everything that they're doing, the tracking, it's literally blown me away, and I'm extremely impressed with what they've been able to accomplish.
So this work that you're doing is volunteer work, correct? Is this something that you're doing in your spare time, or this is something that how does this fit into your life?
I think it's important. And I also think when we're given a lot, we're also expected to give back a lot. And I'm a leadership coach by day, but I cannot help but be involved with being able to close the broadband gap for this community. So as a leader in the community, if I know of opportunities that are out there that can help other business owners and to help other community leaders, it's my position to be able to get back and to help them. So this is just something that, you know, Neil, you got something near and dear to your heart, you're going to give back. And everybody gives back in different ways. And this is my way of doing that, is to create awareness and to be able to spread the education. And if there's a best practice that's working somewhere else, then let's bring it here. And let's see what we can take from that and pay it forward and try to help that here.
And your leadership business, has that suffered from COVID? Have you been able to do it on Zoom?
Yeah. So everything I do is actually done through Zoom calls. And I did have a large engagement that kicked off in January last year. And it was a group coaching. And we had 16 individuals. I flew into Kentucky. We did the kickoff meeting. It was great. And then I had the monthly check-in meetings with the leaders. About halfway through, COVID hits. And you've got your very successful leaders who you're getting ready for the C-suite. Well, if this isn't a game-changer stress event, are you ready to handle what's coming at you? This is right here in the middle. So we coached through this process, and they had to overcome the fact that they don't get to see their manager and their peers and their teams every day face to face. And I often reminded them, your CEO of your bank does not want to see their regulators face to face every day to drive change. Mm-hmm. So you learn how to control your narrative, and you learn how to control how you're going to reach out to people, follow up with people, what the message is, and how it's going to be consistent. And so we interweave that into the leadership coaching, and it's very future focused. It's very build the people up, and let's talk about what's going well, and let's tweak it a little bit going forward, and what are you willing to try? And at the end of the 6 months, we did not do a face-to-face, but we did a WebEx. And at the end of the 6 months, 100% of the leaders that finished They all created 100% measurable change as seen by their peers and their managers. It doesn't matter what I think, doesn't matter what they think, but I got to get their peers to acknowledge and be recognized that that leader was able to grow, and they all accomplished it.
Well, that's impressive, especially during, you know, a six month program that, and, you know, in the third month, you know, COVID hits and it all gets locked down. Now, in terms of your leadership coaching, do you have a niche client? Because many of these skills are transferable across all businesses. Do you specialize in banking or is it any business type?
It's going to be any business type. I've worked with large banks. I've worked with medium-sized businesses. I also give back locally and give to the nonprofits. I think the beautiful thing of being in the finance industry is I have been exposed to more types of businesses and more types of industries than probably the average person. And what makes me unique in this leadership coaching piece is I'm not the PhD. I'm not the person who studied and wrote all the books, but I'm the person who lived in corporate America and had to figure out how to climb a ladder, being a female in the South, try to figure out how to grow this through this, you know, political atmosphere that we live in, and how do I grow through there? And now I can take what I've learned and be able to pay it forward and help other individuals with their careers.
So you spoke about in your program, you had 100% measurable results. What do you mean by that, and how do you track it?
So at 90 days or halfway through the engagement, and I tailor each engagement to each client. And, you know, the bread and butter would be about a 6 month engagement. The one and done training where you show up and you do the cheerleading and everything's great and you're out at the end of the day, for me, that doesn't work. It may work for other people, but it doesn't create long-term results. So at 90 days, within the 6 month engagement, we actually send out a mini survey to the peers or to the stakeholders of the leader. And we ask three or four very simple questions. What's the frequency of the follow-up? Have you seen an improvement in Diane's collaboration with others? And what is one start, stop, or continue that you would like to see Diane to do in the next 90 days? So we do that at 90 days and we compile that information. We review it with the leader and we're like, all right, everybody's saying that you're following up, but you're not getting effective, or you're effective, but you're not following up. There's usually a direct connection between the frequency of the follow-up, much like creating change with broadband and anything else. The frequency of the follow-up allows you to drive home more measurable results. And so at the end of that 90 days, then we're going to do another mini survey at 180 days. More than likely, you're going to see the improvement at the end of the 180 days. With these individuals that I worked with, they're doing all the work. I'm just the sounding board. And they were able to actually achieve results within 90 days, but we stuck it out for 6 months because true change takes place small steps over time. And so when their stakeholders, their peers, their managers are recognizing them as improving on that particular leadership skill, then that creates a measurable result because the peers are saying yes or no, they see the change. And on a scale of -3 to +3, are they seeing improvement? And if so, what's the number?
And so if you have somebody who's looking to take their business to the next level, you know, what advice do you have for them of how to do that? And what would you recommend?
So with the leaders that we see today, and I'm actually working with a very fast growing business right now, they are at X in sales and they kicked, you know, everything. And now they're like, we are just running and we can't run any harder, but we've got to keep growing because we're 5 years in and there's so much more to come. So in order to take the blinders off of these people with this extremely fast growing business, we're going to enroll their key leaders into this program. This program is going to allow their key leaders to begin to have very strategic conversations with their stakeholders. It's going to create collaboration. It's going to create a follow-up and a feedback process for these stakeholders to be able to receive. And the beautiful thing is when you talk with a stakeholder or a peer, you ask, what are one or two things I can do better to collaborate with others in the meetings going forward, Diane? And so you may tell me 1, 2, 3, 4 different things. My job as the leader is not to argue with you, but just to listen to what you have to say. I say thank you, and then I'm going to actually go back and I'm going to think about what I'm willing to do to change in your eyes. And when I use this in my own career, I learned that I had to do very little to change in the eyes of others and to be recognized, because I've overcomplicated it in my brain. And when I can just go listen to somebody else and they can tell me one or two things, and then I choose what I want to do, I follow back up and explain what happened. That's where we begin to collaborate and create impact.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
It's a bully, but we aren't afraid of a fight. It's elusive, but our focus never fades. It's deadly, but we were born to defeat cancer. You may not have heard of us, but our work has helped millions impacted by cancer. We are the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. We are leaders in advancing breakthroughs in immunotherapy, genomics, and personalized medicine. This research saves lives. After 65 years of fighting blood cancers, we've arrived at a game-changing belief. The cures for cancer are in our blood. The drugs and treatments we've developed for blood cancers have helped people affected by many different types of cancers. We are the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. Beating cancer is in our blood. Learn more at lls.org.
Hospice of Santa Barbara is there to help when we're adjusting to living with a life-threatening illness, facing death, anticipating the death of a loved one, or healing our grief after a death. Hospice of Santa Barbara can provide the emotional, social, and spiritual care needed in a supportive, compassionate environment. Hospice of Santa Barbara provides professional counseling for individuals and has many support groups and programs for adults, teens, and children. Services are free, made possible by our community's generosity and by all of the highly trained, wonderful volunteers that give of their time to help those in need. If you would like to make a donation, become a volunteer, or support the important work of Hospice of Santa Barbara, or find out more about hospice services for you or someone you love, please call 563-8820, 563-8820, or visit our website at www.hospiceofsantabarbara.org.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by American Riviera Banks, making your life easier with cutting-edge technology, mobile deposits, free use of every ATM machine in the country, and a level of service other banks can only dream about.
So one of the service offerings that you have, Catherine, is on strategic planning. How valuable do you think it is for companies to have a strategic plan and to work the plan?
It's extremely valuable to be able to have a strategic plan. We can't get to where we want to go without a plan. And the companies that I'm working with are looking at doing a 3-5 strategic plan, 3-5 year strategic plan. One of them that I worked with earlier, or I'm sorry, I guess it's been about 6 months. 6 months ago, they were actually looking at their 10-year plan. So I went in and met with them, the CEO and some of the key leaders that I met beforehand. They helped us identify, you know, what's the goal of this session? So when I do come in and meet with your board of directors, what do you want to see accomplished? And that came from the CEO and the key leaders. We're going to provide all this information, but we're going to need decisions. And we really do want to hear from everybody in the room. And just by some simple guide rails that they provided to me, we were able to go in and encourage everyone to be able to share their voice. You know, there's always some people that talk a little bit more than others. And as a facilitator for these strategic events, it's really important to hear everyone's opinion and be able to pull it out in the crowd and then be able to summarize and reiterate back to the crowd, you know, this is what I'm hearing and this is what we've accomplished at the end of this session. Does this sound accurate to you? So having somebody come in from the outside, and a lot of this is just pure trust. You've got to trust somebody to come in. And I've spent 8 years in the boardroom listening to board meetings and strategic and confidential conversations where they've reached out to me and they said, look, you've been in my boardroom for years. I trust you. I need somebody to come back and facilitate discussions. And it has been extremely helpful for their business.
How do you make sure that once the strategic plan is completed, it doesn't sit on someone's shelf, which is a phenomenon that happens a lot? No one opens it after it's approved.
It does happen. I have found in the industries that I work with, they tend to be very regulated. So in banking, when you go in and set these strategic plans, they tie back into the team plans and the team unit plans and then the staff plans. I've worked with a lot of organizations where they do have that big overall plan. And I've worked with some where it started just with the staff. So I interviewed the entire team during COVID. We brought them in small groups and I asked them, what do they want to see? What are they willing to do within their team? What do they want to see other teams do? How do we collaborate? And so from there, we would take it and we would went to the next layer of management and said, what's possible? What do you want to see, et cetera? And so we've started at the front line and then worked our way all the way through the organization. And then I've been in other ones where they start at the top and they push it out. But the way to be able to deliver it is the leadership that starts at the top. You know, is this leader going to be the one that makes sure that each unit manager is responsible for the goals that are coming to them and creating accountability and holding them to it? So it starts at the top.
I guess what's interesting is that in order to have a client, they have to come to you. So automatically, they're interested in change. You're not getting clients who don't care about someone coming in and helping them, well, they wouldn't have called you. So I guess in a way it's helpful because by definition, a request for your services is the first step in recognizing they have issues.
Yes, and I definitely would like the opportunity to work with people who are ready for that change or curious for the change. I know my career curiosity has gotten me into a lot of growth opportunities. And when that curiosity is there, it's usually a trigger that means we're curious to see what else we can create down the road. And we may think we're going to take a left, but part of going down this path is we may have to take a right a few times before we can take a left. And we just have to follow that curiosity. But first, you've got to have that curiosity before you can show up and begin to work.
Now, how often do you have clients that come to you on a one-off basis? Is it usually a corporation that comes to you as a whole and they want you to coach their staff members or their future leaders or current leaders? Or is it more, I'm a business owner and I want coaching myself?
It actually goes both ways. It goes both ways. I would say the frequency is the business owner has a team that they have that they need to be able to grow internally. And we all know the benefits of keeping internal candidates and being able to promote from within. And how can we stretch the resources that we already have? And when they reach out to me, I had one CEO just reached out and he said, my board just asked me who was going to be my successor when I retire in 5 years. He said, God, they caught me off guard. I didn't have a plan yet. So he went back and he said, I've got two people identified, but I'm not sure which one is going to be the best fit. So let's consider stakeholder center coaching, which is the method that I use. We're going to use that for the next 6 months. We're going to go through the process and see if they're willing to challenge themselves and be able to have the courage and the discipline and the humility to be able to step up their leadership game.
Now, you know, I have this one client that loves the expression is people change, but they don't change that much. What do you see and what do you say to that quote? Because, you know, your whole business is really on helping people find the strength from within to create change, not only in themselves, but also in their organizations.
Change happens when you're ready. Change also happens when you're not ready. So COVID just hit. And nobody was ready for this change. And the ones that are going to survive are going to adapt. And we're going to be resilient. And we're going to make it through this. And that's okay. Because we can't judge other people on their decisions, whether or not they want to be resilient or not. But we're here to help those that are ready to have that courage and the discipline and humility that it takes to step up to create the change.
Now, how has COVID affected your business? Or is your is your business off, or has it grown? What has this pandemic done in your world?
My network has been very kind to me. And during this crazy time, I've stayed in touch with all of my key folks within my network. I've had people that have reached out to me that I haven't heard from in a number of years. And they've reached out for help. And it's been very humbling to be able to continue to serve people and not be in a corporate environment. So business has been good. And I'm just going to continue to pay it forward, help others first, and continue to, you know, be optimistic that it'll continue to roll in. So a lot of this work that we do, we can do this over the phone. We can do this through Zoom calls. It doesn't have to be face to face. And that's part of the resiliency of leadership. And we're working through that now with the leaders. And business owners are beginning to realize, gosh, if I want to retire one day with this business, or if I want to hand this off to the next, you know, lieutenant that's down the line, what am I going to do to get these people ready? And so this has been a real awakening for some people to realize I've got to up their game. I see potential, but I'm not sure if they're ready or not. So, you know, COVID and this unexpected turn that we're all in right now has really opened up a lot of opportunities.
You know, free advice is worth what you paid for. So here's one for you. One of the things you may want to consider is coaching the CEO when he or she retires, because as someone who's retired for 25 years, it's not easy to start with a life that doesn't include work. And so a lot of people, very successful people, really need coaching life skills, not just business skills. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB. And believe it or not, we'll be right back with our final segment.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
When a bank is owned by the community and invests in the community, it answers to a different call. It's personal. It's driven by your needs, not ours. Welcome to American Riviera Bank, based right here in Santa Barbara with branches in Montecito and Goleta. Our customers know us for personal service every day, every way.
You can bank on us.
Bank on us.
Bank on us!
American Riviera Bank. Bank on better.
Hi, I'm Scott Johnson, host of the AM 1290 Golf Radio Show, along with my co-hosts
Ross Cope
and Scott Dweck. Join us every week as we discuss local links news, PGA Tour events, maybe a little bit of fantasy golf in there.
You forgot the FedEx Cup.
And we might play a little bit of that, but probably not. And then we'll try to figure out at the end of the season who owes the most breakfast burritos. Join us Tuesday evenings at 8 p.m., Saturday mornings at 8 a.m., and Sunday mornings, if you're really bored, 5 a.m.
That's in the morning. My favorite broadcast.
A radio show so good. It truly is the best hour of radio on radio.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
So, Catherine, you know, we've talked much about this much on this show today about your coaching skills, and you know that you really do a cross section of emerging leaders, CEOs, the whole nine yards. Neil gave you a new business line of newly retired CEOs. Is there one situation that you see comes up in multiple times over the course of your year for coaching that it doesn't matter the business, but it's the same issue or the same obstacle that people are continually running up against.
People are growing within the organization, or people are retiring out of the organization. So it's creating opportunity. The easiest way to fill these gaps is to hire an internal candidate. It's going to save them money. It's going to save them time. They don't have to onboard and you know, up train them into these positions. But it's a domino effect. Once you fill that one position, there may be one or two that you need to fill. And getting these leaders ready ahead of time, or when you need them, even as short as 6 months out, it takes the stress and the frustration out of the planning that these key leaders are having to do right now. And there's a lot of planning and frustrations that are taking place with COVID. There's people that cannot adapt to the situation that we're in. They may take an early retirement. They may, you know, downsize and just say, I'm just ready to change careers. And so you're going to see a lot of change taking place. As that's taking place, we are seeing that in order for organizations to continue to grow and to support their customers, they need to have key leaders in there, and to be able to replace with internal candidates is going to be a big benefit for them.
And so if somebody's out there listening right now and wants to contact you for your services, what's the best way for them to go about doing that?
So I keep it simple. My website is katherinecanty.com, or you can go to LinkedIn and key in Katherine Canty. It has my contact information out there. I also have a free resource page of articles that I've posted, just if you want to continue to learn about what we've talked about.
And I would like to point out that that's Katherine with a C, and Cantley with a
yes.
C.
Yes.
And you work any place in the country?
Yes. Wherever you need me to go.
And so I'm assuming that much of your coaching work now that's over Zoom, you would be able to do the same, whether it be somebody in California or somebody in Massachusetts from where you are.
Yes. And I did some strategic planning even during COVID, during the fall and the winter months. And I had people ask me actually just to get in the car and drive to where we needed to go. So I was able to get up to, I think it was Pennsylvania. So I just drove up there from South Carolina, and, you know, we tailor the solution to what the client needs. And if it's a good fit, it's a good fit. If not, I'll make an introduction to somebody else who might be a good fit. But so far I've been able to help a lot of my clients.
And the last piece of free advice I gave you 10 minutes ago, didn't get much of any enthusiasm. So I have another one. How about marriage counseling?
Not touching that one.
Well, Katherine, thank you so much for being here. And also thank you for doing what you do in terms of taking your expertise and volunteering to get the kids internet, which is really important. It's really good to see someone who's successful at business and is willing to do, you know, community work. So thank you so much for being our guest. Thank you all for listening. You've been listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll see you next week. It's 3